Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of AV Insider. As always, you can find us on the Rave Radio Network, which, of course, is hosted at ravepubs.com. I'm your host, Johnny Mota. At least last time I checked, that was my name in this country, which doesn't really matter. It's not really about me. It's about my guests, and I always have a special one. Today's no different. I have Brad Paulson, who is the National Sales Manager, or maybe I like to call him the Lead Imagineer for National Sales here at Stateside for Broadman. Brad, thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Hey, so like I always do, I like to know about the company, but before I even get into the company's history, I like to know about you, the speaker of the company today. What's your background? Is this your first tech job, your first AV job, your first job ever? Which I already know the answer to because I've met before, but the listeners here may not know your story, and I'd like to share that with them.
Sure. I've been in the audio all my life. I'm 60 years old right now, but I started retailing back in high school, and then I retailed through college, put myself through college at Southern Illinois University, managing the coolest stereo shop in town. And then I graduated in 78, and I became a manufacturer's rep, went to work for a firm that I really respected, and after about a year and a half, it just wasn't the job I wanted to do, so I moved on from that and went back to retail, and retailed all over the country in Denver and different places where I was just moving around as a single guy, having fun and getting hired by the stereo shop, and I moved out to Santa Barbara in 1983, came out with a 65 Chevy, $300, and I slept on the beach for 6 weeks till the stereo shop hired me, and went to work there, became general manager of that company, which is called Audio Vision. It had been around for decades. And I opened up my own store in Santa Barbara, and I was a high-end dealer for years down in Santa Barbara. And then 25 years ago, I got approached to join B&K Components, and they were a two-channel company, pretty small, but they had just hooked up with Motorola as home theater was exploding to be Motorola's DSP division's alpha site. So Motorola was going to teach them DSP, and I joined as the VP of sales and marketing for them. They were doing $70,000 a month when I joined, and with the help of Motorola and other partners, 4 years later, doing $1 million a month, a couple more years later, doing $2 million a month. And B&K just, it was first American-made Dolby Digital, first American-made DTS, it first real high-power multi-room systems. It was quite a ride. I was there 11 years, and then I moved on, and I helped start Sulus, the $13,000 music server back then, about 9 years ago. I was one of four partners, and I was in charge of sales and marketing, and we got Sulus rolling, which was incredibly unique in the day, because back then it was all media PCs trying to play media, and Sulus was just its own ecosystem. And after 2.5 years, everybody wanted to buy Sulus, Crestron, Harman Kardon, B&W, Meridian. We ended up selling to Meridian. And so I did a year at Meridian teaching them all things Sulus, and then I started a new model where I wanted to kind of help launch more companies, reinvent more companies. I started approaching legacy American audio companies like PS Audio and Teal and actually quite a variety of them with business plans. I'd write the business plan. Here's what's good in your product. Here's what's missing. Here's the sales and marketing angle you should take. And then I would assemble the marketing. I'd assemble the sales teams. And I was doing two or three brands at a time. And then in doing that, there's not a lot of people in our industry that author the business plan, author the sales and marketing, execute both the sales and marketing, move on. And so all of a sudden, I started getting all kinds of phone calls from startup companies, companies wanting to reinvent because they had seen I've been lucky and having a lot of success doing that. And like I said, it was kind of a unique model. And that's how I stumbled on the Broadman a little bit about a year and two months ago now.
Okay, so I have an assistant. Most of my listeners know that I have a little four-legged furry animal assistant who types all my emails and drafts for the show and helps me put the post stuff. And I gotta write down some notes here. Just Brad's audio experience has absolutely none. Got it. That's actually a great story, Brad. I knew some of that stuff, but I didn't know that you were involved in the creation of Sulus. That's pretty awesome. I mean, all of that's awesome, honestly, not to take away from the entire story. But now seeing that it's software-based versus, you know, hardware-driven back in the day and very, very expensive and great for what it was and still is, it's interesting to hear where things get created and instead of we learned where.
The cool thing for me was back then, you know, this is going back 9 years ago, most dealers weren't very network savvy. Right. I was like most dealers, you know, I could set up a router, do whatever, but I wasn't diving in and really learning the complexity of it all, and Sulu's taught me all that, because to run around and sell a $13,000 music server 9 years ago, you had to know what you were talking about. So it really helped me bridge into the networking world, which I've worked with four other networking companies in the last 9 years as well, too. So it was a great training ground for me.
That's awesome. So that brings you to Broadbean. And how long have you been with Broadbean now?
A year and 2 months.
A year and 2 months. I feel like you just said that, and I probably should have been listening a bit more than what you just said. A year and 2 months, assistant. Write that down in the books. Next to no audio experience. Got it. Now, that brings us to Broadbean, where you currently reside, and you are the national sales manager? National sales imagineer? National sales guy?
Yeah, Bob, I'm a one-man game, and they're giving me incredible support from Vienna, Austria, where they're based, but they're really letting... Well, I wrote a business plan for them, a 7-page business plan, and they're following my business plan, and I just get to do my thing, and things are good so far.
That's awesome. Now, can you tell me and the listeners a little bit about Broadbean? Who is Broadbean? What do they do? What do they offer?
Yeah, it's one of the craziest things I've stumbled on. I got a call a year ago last November from a person in our industry that's very well known by everybody. He's a good buddy of mine, and he goes, dude, I got a brand. You got to bring these guys to America. They're at Rocky Mountain Audio Fest, and I just sat through the history and heard them and looked at them, and he told me it was speakers. I'm thinking, I don't really want to do speakers. I'm kind of working more on the technology side right now, and nobody needs another speaker line, no dealer, no rep, whatever. And he starts telling me, no, you don't get it. Based out of Vienna, Austria, they're over 200 years old. They have this incredible luxury history. The speaker designer, Hans Deutsch, that they employ, has been doing it for 40 years and has patents, but has been chasing several key principles for 40 years and improving and trying to fix what he thinks is wrong with box speakers from his point of view. And so I just got really intrigued by it. I went to Hans Deutsch's website, of course, Broadbean's website. The speakers are the most gorgeous speakers I've ever seen in the industry. I mean, they are made by piano cabinet makers, and it's like the black that goes on every speaker, it's like no black you've ever seen. And a lot of expensive speakers have, you know, piano black, but this is true piano finish. They'll take a cabinet, they'll hand spray it with polyester. It takes 24 hours to cure, and it turns gray. Then they hand polish it black, and then they do that 7 more times. So everything Broadbean makes from our least expensive speakers at $5,000 a pair take a week to put the finish on, because you're doing it 8 times, all hand polished. And so cosmetics got me. The technology visually got me, where only the tweeters fire forward. They only use 5-inch woofers, and they incorporate soundboards like a musical instrument in their bass reproduction. And so everything was different. I mean, it's like if you're going to compete in a category, it's good to be completely different if it's good different. So I was taken by the cosmetics and intrigued, and had them send me a set, and it was they just sounded unlike any box speaker I'd ever heard before. And it's so hard to explain, Johnny. I mean, that, you know, you can't say this is the best speaker in the world or this is the best speaker in the world, because speakers do different things. You know, if you want big time movie, you do JBL synthesis or something, and you know, the bullets will rip your hair off if you still have hair, and there's different things you can ask speakers to do, but there's something so unique, so warm, organic, so phase coherent. And then they break. So much of what I've learned through all my years since I was 17, they break so many audiophile principles on how they're constructed and the technology, that it took me almost 6 or 8 months to really own it, to really go, I totally believe in this, you know, because I kept thinking, what's it not going to do? What's missing? How can it be doing this? It's been a crazy ride.
Let's see. Now, and then speaking of referring to it as a musical instrument, which you did, the name Broadbean, Joseph Broadbean specifically, they offer
pianos,
right? Musical instruments. They like you said, their history, 200 years, not only do they make beautiful looking sounding speakers, they also make pianos.
Well, I'll run you through a 60-second history here with this. It's crazy how what goes around comes around, and that's happened in several ways with this company. So Joseph Broadbean started Broadbean in 1796, and you know, based in Vienna, Austria, which was the musical capital of Europe over there at the time, and still is in many, many ways. And Joseph Rodman retired in 1826, and he sold his company to a young apprentice, Ignaz Boisendorfer. And so his apprentice, Boisendorfer, bought the company and changed the name to Boisendorfer, which has a huge name out there, you know, of luxury, one of the top three pianos made in the world by most people's opinions. So Mr. Boisendorfer took off, and for generations, Boisendorfer pianos were made. No speakers yet, but still carrying on the, you know, centuries-old making of fine pianos. The current CEO, Bernd Grün, in 1981, when he was 18 years old, he lived in Vienna. He walks into a Vienna stereo shop, and he's pushing the buttons, listening to different speakers, and there was one set that he really fell in love with, but he couldn't afford them, and they were designed by Hans Deutsch. And so the guy at the stereo shop in Vienna says, Hans lives outside town. Why don't you go outside and outside town and meet Hans? He may have some old prototypes he'd give you a deal on. So the current CEO of Brodmann Acoustics met Hans Deutsch, the designer, when Bernd was 18, bought his first pair of speakers with him. And then he had a lifelong relationship with him where Bernd would help with legal ideas and contracts and how to do things like that while Hans was doing his designs. So in 1998, Boisendorfer wanted to do high-end loudspeakers, but they had to reproduce pianos accurately, the timbre, the feel, the whole thing, and they checked out a whole bunch of brands in Europe, and they fell in love with Hans Deutsch. They said his was the only ones that pianos sounded like pianos coming through the speakers, and so they struck a deal with him to be exclusive with Boisendorfer, and they bought his intellectual property from him, and so he would not make his own brand of speakers anymore or do work for other OEM companies or other loudspeaker companies over in Europe that he had done for years. He's a very famous guy, Hans Deutsch. He's in a lot of acoustic books in the universities over in Europe, so he became part of Boisendorfer. Well, in 2004, Yamaha buys Boisendorfer. And they decided to make pianos differently and just do everything very differently. They didn't want to do the loudspeaker, so they released Hans Deutsch and gave him his intellectual property back. And in 2004, when Yamaha bought this, some of the executives at Boisendorfer then restarted Brodmann in Vienna. So it started out at Brodmann and slid into Boisendorfer. Now it slides back into Brodmann again, still, you know, over in Vienna, Austria. And in 2007, they brought Hans Deutsch back on to make the speakers for under the Brodmann Acoustics name. And so you end up 2012, Bernd Grün becomes the CEO of Brodmann Acoustics. So, you know, here he was in 1981, 18 years old, meeting a guy he thought was one of the greatest speaker designers in the world. And in 2012, he's the CEO of the company that's, you know, manufacturing the speakers by Hans Deutsch. Quite a circle.
Yeah. What's old is new again.
Yeah. It's crazy. And
it's an interesting story.
Well, and I've got pictures of the evolutions of Hans's designs, and they're so radically different what he was trying to do, and specifically in the bass area as well, too. It's just amazing to watch the progression over the years.
Let's talk a little bit about the speaker categories that Brodmann offers. If I'm on their site right now, Brodmann, Brodmann.at. If I go there and go down to their speaker categories, I see the Vienna Classic Series, the Joseph Brodmann Series, namesake, Festival Series, and then there's some in-wall stuff with accessories. What makes them unique from each other? There's cabinetry, there's tweeter arrays and things like that, and then the acoustics internally of the cabinets, I would assume. But can you give me kind of a rundown from series to series on how they would be unique from each other?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. First, you got three different categories, you know, freestanding, on-wall, and soon to be in-wall in about 60 days. And the goal of the on-wall and the in-wall is obviously to make the same, to replicate the same quality sound that the freestanding speakers do, mm-hmm. but to have the form factors that you can fit in within the house where you need to fit in. Right now we have floor standers from $5,000 to $100,000 a pair, which I'll go through the three different series real quick here shortly. You have on-wall, four models. The website's being updated as we speak right now. four AMWAL from $5,000 to $20,000. And then in 60 days, we'll be announcing North American IMWAL from $5,000 to $20,000 a pair. So we'll have all three disciplines and they'll march around through a house. Now, currently in the floor standing, which is what most people, you know, are used to seeing with Brodmann over the years, you've got the Fiesta series, you've got the Vienna Classic series, and the JB series. All of them use soundboards, which I'll explain that technology when you want me to, but that's a real key to everything. The Festival series is our entry-level series. The soundboards are actually on just above the bass. It's the bottom of the speaker. It floats the cabinet above the soundboard, and so it's a small soundboard down below. They use audiophile-grade parts to them. They're hand-assembled on circuit boards, very few parts, typically four or five parts in the crossover, minimal crossover, 6 dB per octave. When you go to the Vienna Classic series, you get full-length soundboards where the back half of the speakers are the soundboard, so much larger soundboard technology employed, a step up in the audiophile grade crossover parts, even more expensive parts, and all ham wired point to point, no circuit board holding the four or five parts to it. And they typically just have a bigger, more lifelike, more weight to them. They all sound bigger than you would expect. The JB series, you know, right now we've got the new JB175 we just launched, and then the JB205, the flagship. And they're so big, the image they put out, it's like going from a 40-inch TV to a 500-inch TV. Everything is revealed, and you really need to have outstanding electronics and all accessories here because they're so revealing. But one of the cool things of the line is that in the whole line, they all use the same tweeters, a silk dome tweeter, very smooth, very warm, very detailed and fast, and they all use only 5-inch woofers. As part of Hans's growth pattern, starting with 15-inch woofers to 12 to 10s and down to 5. I mean, smaller woofers move faster. Smaller woofers are cleaner because you have less surface area to flex. But how do you get bass out of a 5-inch woofer? You know, a 5-inch woofer will play 20 hertz, but not much volume to it. And this is what one of the many things Hans had dedicated his last 40 years to, because he's got several big beliefs, but one of them is that whether it's box speakers, we're talking box speakers, whether it's ported or acoustic suspension, you've got some big peak resonances down in the box below 100 hertz that are very large. I mean, ported boxes, the cabinet has its main peak resonances down low, but then the port creates its own resonance as well, too. And these are like, you know, 10, 12, 15 dB peaks are typically in boxes. And then manufacturers have to pull those down via crossovers and through stuffing within the box to quiet it. Well, Hans, what he's tried to do and he's done successfully is, how can I create low bass without having the peak resonances in there so I don't have to introduce phase error in the crossovers by pulling down a big hump at 60 or a big hump at 50 or whatever? Because those big humps that we're used to listening to, even when they're pulled down, they're still there. And then they multiply. You hear them in lower amounts as the harmonics go up. You know, 60 becomes 120, becomes 240, becomes 480. And that's part of the box sound that we're used to listening to. Through the soundboard technology, Hans is actually able to create linear bass, powerful bass, all the vibrant bass you want with very, very little undulations in the frequency response, no big peak resonances. Really, the only linear bass response in a box speaker, other than some of the big open baffle designs where the woofers are just wide open and there's no cabinet around them. And the second part, if you're not doing those big cabinet resonances, you don't need the stuffing inside the box, because Hans also believed that the stuffing, while it's helping the bass region tremendously get cleaned up, it was also taking away dampening resonances of the lower mid-range that you want to hear. Parts right. of the guitar, the strings, the vocals, and that. And like he would say, you wouldn't put cotton in a violin. You wouldn't put cotton in a piano, you know, and try and stuff them. So all the Brodmanns have absolutely no stuffing in them. They just rainbow with the feeling of the image and the naturalness that gets taken away before, as well as having that linear bass through the soundboard technology.
What an interesting point.
Well, think about this. So you take a 5-inch woofer, you put, say, 25 hertz in, the woofer moves, but you don't get much volume.
Right.
to oversimplify this, because he's got patents on this and has for years, what he does is, let's say you got the speaker, and in the back half you have two soundboards, and the soundboards sit 4 millimeters off the cabinet. You can see between the soundboard and the cabinet.
Okay.
And then he cuts a hole that he has designed the dimensions in that to let pressure out of the box, so it's not being created inside. And what happens is the majority of the volume, the majority of the amplitude below 130 hertz is created in the airspace between the soundboard and the cabinet. So because you don't have a cabinet around it, it's open, you don't have cabinet peaks and resonances, and the air is moving the majority of the amplitude that you get in the bass in the air slot between the soundboard and the cabinet. And you just get this super fast, super natural, clean sounding bottom end that can just stomp the room apart, even though you're using 5-inch woofers.
Wow.
Crazy.
Still trying to grasp my head around that. So while I'm thinking about that concept, which has been working well, very well for Broadman, obviously,
yep.
Let's talk about, or you, because I don't know, and I'm sure my listeners may or may not know, but I definitely do not know, the soundboard technology. What exactly is a soundboard that Broadman's using, and what does it do to the speakers?
So I just mentioned the soundboards were, like on the VC series, it's the back half of the cabinets. It's right in line with the grills. If you look at a Broadman VC speaker, you got grills on the front half, and the 5-inch woofers are behind that, behind the grills shooting sideways. And then the back half, you have the soundboard mounted off the cabinet. So the air rolls out of the box. A lot of pressure comes out. You're not creating that kind of box sound you get when you get an enclosure going around. And it actually rolls off at 130 hertz at 4.5 dB per octave. It's tuned by Hans in his formulas. And so the box doesn't create these great big pressures because it's not creating a lot of amplitude below 130 hertz within the box. But then that pressure comes out, and the soundboard, this is oversimplifying, but the soundboard almost creates like a pressurizer where it takes this big hole down below, 130 and below coming in, and then compresses it and raises the amplitude back up to where it's equal with the rest of the music, with the mid-range and the highs.
I see. It's Hans's solution to versus dampening, like, so where you want to keep those mid-range frequencies, right, where like some people fill their cabinets with dampening and things like that for low-end frequency, but also eliminates their mid-range frequencies that you want to hear, right?
Yeah, and you get the most natural bass that I've ever heard in a box speaker. That actually, it was a short story. So after I talked to Bernd, the CEO, he sent me a pair of the $20,000 VC7s.
Okay.
And they showed up in my garage, and my best friend of 25 years and I, we opened them up, and the first thing I saw was most gorgeous finish work I'd ever seen. They're handcrafted, the veneers are hand-done, and then you have clear polyester piano finish on top of everything. They're just gorgeous. And I remember thinking, I hope these sound good, because they sure look really cool. We put them into the room and we turn it on and we play a couple cuts, and I look at my friend and I wasn't sure what to say. It was so different. The presentation, the image is different than traditional box speakers. The warmth is different. But what I noticed right away, I told Bernd the next day when he called him, what'd you think? I said, there's only two things I can say right now. I said, number one, they're the prettiest, most luxurious finish work I've ever seen on a speaker, hands down. And it has the most natural bass I've ever heard in a box speaker. That hit me and hits everybody immediately, because you just don't have those peaks and or the correction of those peaks that you're dealing with in the bass. And then I had to grow into the rest of it. They image more like magna pans. They image with that, you know, the holy grail of planar, where you get a 360 image, the speaker's in the middle, and you listen into the image, where traditional box speakers, you know, they shoot the image at you, so you get the flat screen image in front with a little depth to it, but, you know, you turn it up, it jumps on you harder to the point where it hurts, you turn it down a little bit. And that's what we all grew up with box speakers, but these play, and even Absolute Sound a year ago on a review of our 7 grand F2s, compare them to a pair of MagnaPan 1.7s, but said that obviously the Broadmans have more scale and weight and dynamics than the MagnaPan, but had that kind of cleanliness and imaging to them.
What you're describing to me sounds like Broadman fully 100% from pianos to speakers creates musical instruments, and they've taken this approach in that respect with their box speakers.
You couldn't have put it better. I've heard many people refer to stated just the way you just stated it, Johnny.
And visually looking at them, they look like artist mastery of a floor standing and or in wall. But and then I mean because I can't see inside of it, but the way you described it, it just sounds like a musical instrument 100%.
Yeah, and I mean when you hear the extra resonances in the mid range that you're not, you know, the little bit that gets damped away by traditional designs, they rainbow like a musical instrument that you listen in. And even at low volume, this is a big deal because this has been one of my pet peeves forever, is traditional box speakers, even high-end stuff, guys typically do so much work on the crossover because they can. They got a computer, they got programs, and so you know they put in a notch filter to pull this 3 dB bump down. They put a notch filter in to smooth this 1 dB bump down. And you know, you end up with 20, 30, 40, 50 semiconductors typically in a crossover, with the exception of a few guys like, you know, Teal and Vandersee and stuff that still kind of do a minimal thing. But 99% of the high-end speaker companies and regular companies have huge crossovers in them. And these speakers, I'm sure you've experienced this too, is at the normal volume most people listen to at home, 98% of the time, speakers sound flat. Right. There's no dynamics, there's no weight to the bass. And so we sell them a nice 5 grand system, 10 grand system, 50 grand system. And for 95% of the time, it sounds like AM radio, they're purchasing. Some of the planers don't do that. They don't have the crossover that's choking everything down, all the coils that are compressing and all the caps that are smearing. And that's the same with the Brahmin. At low volume, they have the same dynamics you would expect. It's amazing. You can actually turn them on, and many people are talking about this now that are becoming dealers and reps and stuff like that. You can turn them on at low volume, and they're alive, and they have the weight, and they have the texturing of the music. And you can sit there and talk to your friend, but actually be connecting and enjoying the musical performance, not feeling like you need to quit talking and turn the volume up. It's a whole different experience for me with a box speaker.
So what you just described, and for some of the people that maybe don't catch what you've stated without saying all the words. So what I've seen in the audio industry with friends and in the industry without, from speaker reps, manufacturers, and et cetera, what I've heard is an argument that states that if you're not sitting in your chair 5 feet away with your speakers in front of you and actively listening to speakers, you aren't enjoying music. To where the other side of the conversation is, you and I, Brad, could be having a conversation, walking around a room and talking and listening to music and still actively enjoying the music as if you were there, right? And it could be... It doesn't have to be super loud. You and I can still carry this conversation, but still feel the warmth and the depth of this music coming from, let's say, in this case, Brodmann speakers. Yeah. And that's something that I think will just be an argument for the end of time. But that could also be true with, let's say, you know, I agree that you and I could be in a room together with Brodmann speakers and have it playing at a low volume and still really feel the music, right? Really engage the music, but also still have a conversation and not have to turn it up to do both. Whereas I couldn't say that would be true with some other manufacturers out there. There are others that I could still say that to be true with, but I think that there are some speakers that couldn't reproduce that accuracy, that warmth, and that detail without turning up the music and you and I kind of stopping to not have our conversation anymore and enjoy that music. It's tough. I think that all has to do with the way the technology that's put into a speaker or how it's made and who makes it. Which is why I think that both sides of the conversation exist.
Well, yeah, I totally agree. And one little story I'd like to flip, and this is just my own experience, just my own opinion. You know, I'm just a simple guy sitting on the couch, so I'm not claiming to be any authority here. You know, in the world of speakers, you got the arguments, you know, first order 6 dB phase coherent versus 24 dB phase coherent. And you have amazing inventors on both sides arguing their stories. So which one is right? You know, because it couldn't be more different, the first order crossover and the fourth order crossover. Well, what I've come to believe, and this is through stuff I've owned as well as playing in stores, because I travel every other week the nation for the last 25 years working with, you know, top dealers, top integrators, top storefronts, whatever, so I get to hear them as well too. What I've experienced is, and what I've come to believe, I believe that the 24 dB per octave camp is right, that is the most phase coherent design there is. Their math is right, their computer is right, their measurements in the anechoic chamber is right. But I also believe when you take those steep crossover slopes and you put them in a room where you've got walls in the room and you turn them on, you have this 360 degrees spinning. I like to liken them to little tornadoes flying out at all these little crossover points and everything. Well, when that hits the wall and bounces back thousands of times into the front coming sound, there's so much spinning going on, you can't get it to come back together again the way they hear it in their anechoic chamber and the way the mass says. You take them outside in the driveway, they image like bandits. You bring them back into a normal room, you can't get the magical image because the room is destroying it with the reflections.
Right.
That's where the 6 dB guys, or no crossover guys, ideally, but I mean, that's a tough one to go for. The 6 dB guys, you got such gentle sloping on the crossover points that when it's reflecting off the wall, it's gentle slope trying to blend with gentle slope rather than a maze of tornadoes trying to blend back together. So you get more real results in a room with a simple, this has just been my experience and my belief of chasing the Holy Grail.
Yeah, I get it. Which is actually a really good description of how acoustics work and why I think auto demonstrations are tough. Like when you go and listen to someone's speaker, they're primarily set up in a really nice sound dampened room or something like that, or set with minimal reflections, because then you go home and then that room most likely is not set up in any way to accommodate the reflections, or isn't a big open room for something for a speaker to breathe in with minimal reflections, as if we were just sitting outside and just listening to everything with there's no walls and no glass, and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's theory, but then there's, you know, application, and you got to deal with application ultimately. And there's one other little thing I want to just throw in here, because this is another pet peeve of mine, is typically, you know, audiophiles and audiophile dealers, you go in and you're going to listen to a pair of box speakers. They've got them, you know, 3 feet off the wall, 4 feet off the wall, whatever. And they're doing that because the typical box designs, even after trying to fix it a little bit, still have lower resonances in there. And if they get them too close to the wall, they get muddy. So they pull these things way out from the wall to try and reduce the mud on the bottom end and get the speaker to sound big and open. But and that's fine. I mean, grew up with that. It's not how typical people would place them into a room, but that's what the options were. Well, the Brodmans, they can go very close to the wall because they don't have those peak resonances that are still laying in little bits inside, so they don't get muddy and boomy. But the side part of being to a wall, and as I've explained this to dealers as I travel, everybody's like, wow, okay, I get that. I never really thought about that. Is a box speaker radiates a lot of energy out the back that hits the back wall and comes forward. Okay, it just does. I mean, you know that. And so if you're 3 feet out from the wall, what happens is that energy goes back, and there's a lot of it all the way up into the mid-range. It goes 3 feet back, and then it comes 3 feet forward. So it's got 6 feet of time delay trying to blend with the oncoming sound that's shooting at you out of the front of the speaker. And let's say you're 4 feet out from the wall, you got 8 feet of time delay. It never gets phase coherent again because it's 6 feet behind in timing. So the closer you can get a speaker to the wall to time that reflection so the time delay is less, the more coherent the image becomes. That's just basic physics.
Right. Now let's talk about, well, I think you already said, but the products themselves, they're all made in Vienna, Austria?
Yep.
Okay. If I were to order any of the speakers today, what's the rough lead time on a product?
Right now, about 4 weeks, as they're all made to order.
Okay, that's what I was gathering. When we talk about such a complex musical instrument, I would assume so much has a lead time to be made. Yeah. And what are the different finishes on some of the floor standing products? I mean, from what I can see, it looks like there's some, I don't want to say marble, but like, I don't even know if that's cherry wood or walnut or like a... It looks like there's multiple finishes, and they're all pretty beautiful.
Well, yeah, the website just shows some finishes. We can do any finish, and we do major custom stuff.
I mean,
And so, I mean, you can get any finish you want, but some of the crazy things that Brabham has done, we just made a pair of speakers with Barrett Jackson logos on them for one of their big car auctions that they had to give away a pair of Brabham. So put the Barrett Jackson logo onto them and make them look really cool. We had an Asian customer that wanted some art, specific art, put on their speakers. They were doing a 7.1 on-wall system with our big stuff. And so they sent the art. So we brought an artist in. They transcribed the art onto the speakers, but then inlaid all the art was all 24 karat gold.
Wow.
So all the design was completely gold, and then you had the black in between, you know, the artistic pieces, and then sprayed with clear polyester so the gold doesn't tarnish. Italian car manufacturer that does a race car, carbon fiber. He wanted the same carbon fiber on his speakers that his car had, no problem. We did that for him. And then we also can match pianos to speakers. We have people that will buy a big pair of speakers for their music room with a matching Brabham grand piano, all with the identical veneer to them.
That sounds amazing. By doing custom stuff, what does that add? An extra few weeks on top of the made-to-order process?
Changing veneers doesn't really add anything because there's a big veneer shop we work with in Vienna that's quite well stocked. But doing something like gold or something like that, you're probably 8 to 10 weeks on that.
Okay. I mean, so it pretty much sounds like as long as I know what range or family of speaker I want, you guys can pretty much make it however I want it.
Yep, absolutely.
That's great. In the world of CE or CI, if you will, custom electronics and custom install market for AV and things like that, custom is a word that people, I think, like to do because when dealing with people, and if you're going to purchase speakers of this magnitude, you probably want it the way you want it. I've worked with some local guys here in my little hometown, and he's a woodworker by trade, and eventually, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but they ended up, you know, working with a local speaker guy, and you know, they got into some Brazilian Babinga woods and things like that. And, yeah, you know, it really made him happy. And, I, you know, one day as a kid, you know, I had no idea that this was going on. You know, I would just go over and hang out. And my friend's old man would be hanging out in his big, you know, lavish, like, living room. And this was an old Victorian home. And he did, like, beautiful spiral steam staircases in this place. And he's got some really nice speakers in there. And I never really paid attention until I got older and got more into the AV industry. And started learning that, you know, he was, you know, building speakers and things like that on the side as a fun little project, and with some, you know, natural woods from the rainforest and things like that, or just all over. It was pretty interesting to kind of see his little shop that he had on the side. It was pretty cool.
That's fun. I mean, you know, we do sell the audiophiles, but I find we're selling more to non-audiophile people that haven't had speakers in their living room or dining room or playroom or whatever because of cosmetics, you know.
Right.
Maybe they've got in wall or in ceiling, but at this stage in their life, they'd like to have some friends over and drink some good wine and be able to actually hear some really nice sounding music, but the boxes need to be gorgeous. It needs to be, you know, luxurious furniture that fits into their room, you know, and that's where we're having a lot of success because I'm able to put, you know, it's hard for people to put, you know, Wilsons in the living room or Revels in the living room because they look like speakers, you know, and people are so against that. But then we have such a skinny form factor, and then with the gorgeous finish work and the hand craftsman, all of a sudden people are like, hey, I can put that in there. That's pretty cool. I'd love to show my buddies this.
Exactly. You know,
not just a speaker box.
Right, right. It's more art. It's more musical. It's more instrumentation. It's something to be shown and displayed and listened to. Which I think is more and more becoming a common theme again, where this was, like I said earlier, what's old is new again, and the idea of a dedicated room or a piece on display that is a musical instrument and also your audio speakers, I think is becoming more and more of a common occurrence. Not rapidly, but it's slowly happening again, just like better quality audio versus compressed audio.
I totally agree, Johnny. I've seen this in the last 5 years really picking up, and that's part of why I wanted to jump in with Brabham, because I see it. And what's happening is, you know, we went through the 2000s when home theater, everybody wanted to have home theater, and the clients were just buying it, didn't even look at what was on the paper, and, you know, money was flowing before 2007.
Right.
And And now the theater thing's kind of worn off, you know, and guys are getting a little older, guys and gals are getting a little older, and they're kind of like, you know, I've had some health issues and this and that, and I'm kind of worn out by my computers, you know, I love them, but they beat the crap out of me all the time, too. I kind of like to have something simple, some new toys, like maybe some music where I just turn the knob in this room and it comes up and it's easy to operate and I don't have to, you know, reboot the iPad or the touch screen or whatever. And we're definitely seeing, I would say, the 50 to 65-year-old crowd really coming on wanting to have some two-channel in one of their rooms again, like they did when they were younger and growing up. Mm-hmm. And right now, 90% of all high-end audio, real high-end audio, is being sold in the multi-room jobs. It's crazy.
It's crazy awesome, as I like to say. It makes me happy just because I think, you know, that's something I got to grow up with. And that was like, you know, we just had like those speakers in living rooms and things like that, or a room for music. And I, as a child, was interested by it. But I think also I probably ruined a lot of speakers because I just wanted to turn them up all the way. And Dad probably did not like that. At all. But I definitely have more of appreciation for that now, and it's interesting to see that starting to come back again, you know, as manufacturers building the hi-fi stuff. I've seen a trend also, as well, as they might be adopting maybe some more lower end affordable stuff for the new generation moving forward, so that they can have a taste of what audio should be like, and as they get older, maybe they'll take a step deeper into the world of audiophilia or hi-fi or the next family line of their classic series or something else, to where they are going to have a two-channel room or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope. And I mean, you know, when I was a kid, my first stereo when I was 14 was an AM pocket radio. You know, I mean, I had to grow up and get the financial means and buy other things and exposure. And you know, I've got, you know, my two-channel system right here is probably, it's modest, probably retails at, because I don't have to buy it all, you know, probably $90,000 worth of gear here. And I probably run, well, I've spent tens of thousands of dollars in audio gear, not just using the gear that I can get free. I'm always rotating gear through. So for the 20-year-olds and the 30-year-olds, as they get more financially set and more homes, I totally agree. I mean, when iPod came out, everybody's like, oh, iPod's going to ruin the young people. I had an AM radio. The iPod kicked ass on my AM radio, but I grew up through it, you know. And so right. I totally agree. It's just exposure and means and timing.
Now, let's talk a bit, a few more things before I wrap the show up here. Where are some shows that people can go and view these gorgeous looking instruments and also listen to them?
I'm doing this kind of differently. When I gave the business plan to Broadman last December, I said no shows, no CES, no CEDIA, no ISE. I said, let me spend the shows locally with the dealers locally to do events and things like that. And then we're also building a Broadman Experience Center down by LAX. And one is going to be a very large theater, 38 by 30 with a 15-foot ceiling for our Imwell product. And then a two-channel room that's very good size as well, too. And then I called a lot of the top manufacturers to see if I could borrow some gear, and everybody said yes. I was able to borrow about $350,000 worth of associated gear for the two rooms. And I'm going to have all the Broadman stuff on display there, where if a dealer wants to bring a client in, fly him from Colorado, fly him whatever, here the 60 grand because they don't have them there, or the 100 grand, or just see the whole line, I'll be able to do that. Whip right. I live in Santa Maria, California, so, you know, it's 3 hours down, and I'm at LAX.
Cool.
Yeah, that's great. Gonna be a powerful tool.
When do you think that will be ready for the masses?
The two-channel room will be done in about a week.
Cool.
The theater probably about 60 days, and when the theater's done, it's at launch. I'm going to do a great big party there, and I'm going to do a big press PR thing, and I like events. I've got an event February 23rd in Florida, and this is super cool. There's a high-end integration firm that's in the high-end audio as well, too, called Definitive Electronics down in Jupiter, Florida. We're having a Broadman night. They've picked like a dozen of their best customers that they think would appreciate Broadman. They're picking these people up in limos to bring them in for the show. We've hired a chef to cook for them right in front of them. And, of course, it'll be the wine master and all that. We're bringing a Brahmin piano in to play in the sound room. We've hired the pianist already. And it's a unique way. I mean, you look at CE Pro, which is kind of, you know, the business-to-business side magazine out there, and there's always cover shots. This guy did a million-dollar theater for this famous producer. This guy did five, you know. But you don't see a lot of ideas on how to help grow business, and this is so unique. I think we're going to get a cover shot. We've already been told we'll be the feature for that issue as well, too. But it's like date night. You know, mom and dad are home. They get invited. Limo picks them up. Dinner cooked in front of them, great wine, live music. You know, Bernd, the CEO of Brahmin's, flying in. Listen to Bernd talk for 10 minutes about some of the history and some beautiful stories he's had. And we're going to play a couple songs on the piano and then play the same songs through the speakers, and they can just see the stuff. And it'll be a low-pressure, fun night. It's like date night for a couple.
That's great. Now, that is down by LAX. The rooms are, right? Not the event.
The events in Florida, the Experience Center is down by LAX in Culver City.
Right. And then, so for now, no shows, correct?
Right.
Okay. And let's see. Then you have your dealers, obviously here stateside, which is what you're helping with, and obviously across seas. If anyone out there is interested in becoming a dealer, learning more about Brahmin, aside going to Brahmin.at, is there a better way to reach out and do so?
Well, they can reach out to me, and I'm happy. I mean, that's how a lot of it happens already. I'm happy to both talk, share, you know, send digital information over to them, and then I'll have the Experience Center if they're so inclined they want to see in touch.
And what is the best way to do that, Brad?
Through my email.
Which is?
Brad.Paulson, and that's with an E.
At
Arceau Arts, ArceauArts.com.
ArceauArts?
ArceauArts.com.
And that's Brad.Paulson at ArceauArts.com. To reach out to Brad, and again, I'm just going to direct people over to the website again. It is Brahmin.at. It's BRODMANN.AT. You do not need the WWWs anymore. We live in the future. We do not live in the past, unless your webmaster coded it that way, in which case that would be unfortunate. But again, we live in the future. You don't need them. If you're more of a social person and you want to connect with them on the web, obviously, you could do so. If you want to go to Facebook, they have them a like at facebook.com/Brahmin Acoustics. If you want to go on Twitter and give them some information at 140 characters or less, actually, I think they might have upped that ante, but regardless of how you want to do it, on Twitter is at Brahmin. There is a YouTube channel where you can get some video. You can view these masterpieces. You can listen to them through your computer is one way. It's going to be youtube.com/user/Joseph Brahmin. And if anyone out there would like to reach out to me about the show, tell me that you hate it, that you love it, that you have some notes, share them with me and my four-legged furry assistant at Johnny, JohnnyMota, @gmail.com. That's JohnnyMota3. Twitter's @JMota3. Instagram's the same. Facebook is probably just my normal name. I don't know. My assistant does all the work. So if you're ever getting emails back that are poorly misspelled and typed and probably not checked for grammar, it's because he is small. He's just a little puppy, about 6 months old. He's all paws and no thumbs. So don't get mad about that. He's doing his best as a new assistant. Everyone, this has been AV Insider. Brad, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And as time progresses and you can talk about those new products that are going to be announced shortly, I would love to have you back to talk more about them.
Oh, sounds good. I appreciate it, Johnny. It's great.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. AV Insider, we're getting closer to 100. Catch you on the next one.